views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously, especially when they give advice. Do not take Marshall's analogies literally, especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey. The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember, it's just sports.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye. Rahimi and Harris, 10 to 2 on 670. The
survey that the Bears sent out to season ticket holders about what they want in a new stadium. And I'll read to you what I have. The Bears are a proud part of the community for over a century and have shared plans to build a new enclosed stadium located in Chicagoland.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
Restaurant in the stadium. I mean, what are our restaurant options, guys?
We got to have restaurants in the stadium.
That's our project. As a show and as a listenership, we got to figure out what restaurants we want in the stadium.
45 minutes to open, chefs.
Yes, chef. Yes, chef.
You ever have a great Valpolicella Ripasso?
No.
Where
I don't even know what that is.
Ibra, make sandwiches. Don't stop.
If it makes you guys feel any better or worse, I think I'm going to try my hand at an Instant Pot queso mac and cheese recipe I found. We'll see how it goes. The recipe I got was from Texas Monthly.
We are not good, chef.
No?
Yeah. Chef.
Game day fan zone adjacent to the stadium. Is there a bounce house?
Say it back, please, chefs.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You know, I have been asked a time or two what I was making for the Super Bowl. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. We broadcast to you live through the Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai Diaz. Nice job on the open, Robbie Triano, Ray Diaz, our producer as well. We also have Brandon Fryer helping out and wearing a very official-looking Chicago Bears polo. Brandon always looks sharp.
That's like dress code appropriate, too.
It is. And he looks like he works for the Bears right now. Well, it's like something you could walk into Hallis Hall and be like, yes, I work here.
He's hoping the Bears work for him, which is a question, according to many, many pundits around the country these days, as I'm still waiting for that top 100, the NFL 100, and also all these lists about what the Bears are not doing.
Yes, we will talk about the list as well. I know that was mentioned in our show tease and our promo. That will also continue tomorrow. We also have Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. Hello to our Twitch mob. Hello to the people who help us out. Connor O'Donnell, Jacob Stutz, our new video producer. You can also text us or call us 312-644-6767. And in case you forgot, this is your friendly reminder, tomorrow we will unleash the meatball machine. I've seen a lot of proposals for trading for Paul Skeens. And you know what? Sometimes you need to just get your crazy trade proposals out of the way so your brain can think again. Go ahead and vent to the meatball machine. We'll put them all together and have some fun because this is sports. And we should be able to do that from time to time.
You're right.
What has not been fun, unfortunately, has been the Cubs' performance against the Minnesota Twins, which unfortunately continued yesterday, a 4-2 loss. Well, they tried for Cade Horton. They tried to give him some run support, but unfortunately it just didn't work out in a way that was productive yet again. And the Cubs' lack of power, also an issue in this game. Singles aplenty, 1-for-4 with runners in scoring position again. This is not how you want to go into the All-Star break, and it's not how you want to address a team that at 2 games below .500 just picked up 2 because they played you.
Listen, the Twins are having a moment right now. And their moment just happens to coincide with a negative moment for the Cubs. But I am not at all concerned about these two games after witnessing what I witnessed last week. I'm taking this for what it is. The Cubs have lost the series against the Twins. They may very well get swept by Minnesota today.
That's a real possibility. That is a possibility. You can hear it on the score.
And not only may they get swept, but like obviously 0 for 5 with runners in scoring position yesterday. Today, looking back at last night, they were 1-for-4. And the one wasn't exactly a line drive that, you know, split the gap or anything. It's an infield hit, which was almost a fielder's choice off the bat of Dansby Swanson. But congratulations, Dansby, on getting a hit with a runner in scoring position, however you got it done. My whole thing is this. How many times have the Cubs been swept in a 3-game series this year?
Goose egg.
Exactly.
Zero.
You look at everybody else, all the other big teams, the Dodgers, the Tigers, the teams with better records than them in the major leagues, they've endured sweeps. And I think we have to just kind of take a look at the fact that you're going to have bad series. This is a bad series. Even if they win today, you're going to say, well, they lost 2-3 to an underwhelming Minnesota Twins team.
Right. But after a 500 month of June, you just don't want to see it add up. So how are they putting this together in a way that, A, gets you somewhat better before the break facing a Yankees team where, as we mentioned earlier coming up, they DFA or release DJ LeMahieu, and that leads me to believe that the Yankees are probably making some sort of move in the infield at the trade deadline or close to it, so we'll see that happen potentially. Doesn't really affect the Cubs as much, but either way, you just don't want to put together back-to-back months where you're saying to yourselves as observers, this is not the team that we thought we were seeing. Also, I say all of this knowing what the Milwaukee Brewers are doing right behind you. Continue to close the gap, taking the series against the Dodgers in commanding fashion. And I did think about that potential trade that Greg Amsinger from MLB Network mentioned while I was watching highlights of that game. The possibility of Adolis Garcia coming to Milwaukee's, it's horrifying if you're an opposing pitcher on the mound.
Are you more worried about Adolis Garcia joining the Brewers or the Yankees trading for a third baseman, therefore taking away a position that's already not a lot of stock, taking another item off the shelf, if you will?
No, because I'm used to the Yankees taking items off the shelf. I mean, and especially in the American League, it's not as big of a concern for me, no.
Yeah.
But when I consider what the Brewers are doing, and when you look at the standings, which I'm already doing, and everybody will be like, oh, relax. Yeah, okay, you can relax. But when we put all this together at the end of the season, these are the moments we talk about. We talk about the game that happened right before. Brewers are 1.5 games back.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's relaxed after seeing what the Brewers did to the Dodgers in that 3-game series. It was a powerful sweep. The third sweep that the Dodgers have suffered this season, if you're going back and looking at how well they've done, the Angels, the Astros, and the Brewers have all swept them. Now, the Dodgers, by the way, since we're talking about more worried about the National League, they've now lost 6 games in a row.
Yeah, but you know what their situation is. You know that they have injuries, and you know that they're going to move heaven and earth to try to get whatever talent they possibly need. Every person we've talked about in stalking, I feel like the Dodgers are also interested.
Well, we've talked about starting pitchers, and we know they need starting pitchers.
Right. So, yeah. And so when it's Seth Lugo, it's like, oh, well, the Dodgers are interested. The Mets are interested, for example. Or when it's any one of the number of the names that you can mention, the Dodgers are going to be in the mix there. And so, I think that's the difference, is you know that, A, they have a lot more established high-level talent, even when it's injured, than the rest of the major leagues.
You're saying, like, talent that's not going to be out for the rest of the season. They're coming back eventually.
Well, yes, and the base is higher. I mean, listen, what Jacob Mizrowski did to guys like Mookie Betts, that is putting yourself on notice to them. But when it comes to knowing that that's still Mookie Betts on the other side, you know what he brings to the table, for example.
Yeah, I
but
think
Mitch Keller, you don't know if the Dodgers, like, there's a good chance the Dodgers may want him. You just don't know. Like, they're always going to be in the mix for that discussion. I feel the same about the Yankees in most years. It's about what the Cubs want to do at this time.
If this was free agency, I would feel more aligned with what you're saying. But because this is in season and the Cubs do have prospects and it's not about who's writing the biggest check,
right.
I think the Cubs are, it's a fair play situation.
Yeah, but also I don't necessarily know that I want them to rip up the entire farm.
Oh, no.
You know, that's the other part of this.
But
they already gave up a lot to get Kyle Tucker.
The chip that everyone keeps talking about is the Owen Casey portion of the program, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what do you need to get back in order to be good with moving Owen Casey? I guess that's what it ultimately is going to come down to.
That's a good question.
That's what it's ultimately going to come down to if we're talking about what other teams are willing to do to get the arms or the bat that they feel like they need to make a World Series push. What are you willing to give up, Chicago Cubs? And I think they're willing to give up Owen Casey for the right piece.
Does it help you, though, win this series against the Minnesota Twins today? No, unfortunately not. This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today as you are listening to Raheemy and Harris on the Score talking about the Cubs. We do get you ready for Cubs baseball. That is coming up at 11:35 right here on the Score. We take a look at what happened yesterday. You know, Cade Horton goes 4 2/3 innings, gives up 6 hits, 4 runs. They're all earned. 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. he's still not the one who's drawing a lot of criticism from me. He got called up. He's a rookie. I'm not expecting him to be like a Skeens his rookie year, a Mizorowski as to what we're seeing now. I just need him to be his best self. So I know that's him still trying to put together a body of work. But unfortunately, when the Cubs batters aren't helping out as much as you'd like to see, you know, our friend of the show, Ian Happ, goes 0-for-4 out of the leadoff spot as a designated hitter. We've talked about his struggles. I think the past month is a good example, the past 2 weeks especially so. We talked to him about it on Tuesday. Those are the kind of things that will hurt you in a game like that. That's a 42, you know, that again is either, as we saw yesterday, before Porter Hodge entered the game, or the day before yesterday, before Porter Hodge entered the game, that was a slim margin. You were talking about two runs there at that time. And then, you know, when you're talking about this 4-2, those are the things that matter. You know, could a duck have been on the pond for Kyle Tucker or Seiya Suzuki in those situations? And I think we'd be talking about a different ball game.
Which of the key plays, if we're looking back at last night's game, was most concerning to you? Is it the Dansby Swanson allowing that runner to score and kind of having his not Tom Emanski moment? That's not what I saw in the defensive drills growing up. You're supposed to be able to see everything as you're receiving the ball.
Yeah, that was surprising because essentially people are describing it as either you saw Minnesota steal a run, which I don't necessarily know that that's what happened. I think they just took advantage of attention directed in another place. Yeah, runner on third scores there because they're concerned about what's going on between first and second base.
I think looking at it, I thought that they were just super aggressive, which was surprising because the Cubs are such a good defensive team. You usually see that against teams who are not good on defense.
Right.
And the Cubs don't fall under that category by all the metrics and by the eye test. But that was like a rare slip last night. So I felt like, oh, this is what we're doing? They really are kind of in a desperate mode, if you will. And the Cubs aren't in a desperate mode. And I think that's what we've seen play out the first two games of this series.
Anytime you give a team extra outs or extra opportunities, if they take advantage of them, they've made you look. They've taken one from you, and it's a matter of how you respond. And unfortunately, they didn't have enough offensive firepower. They've only scored three runs this entire series so far, and they hadn't had enough to answer. Let's listen also to what Craig Counsell had to say about his starter last night, Cade Horton.
It was okay. You know, the first inning was, you know, the start of this 0-2 hit by pitch. And that kind of gets the inning going, and you know, he had a chance to get out of it, but he left the pitch to Jeffers, not a bad pitch, probably an executed pitch. He did a nice job with it. The pitch to Correa was just, you know, that's the one that he got too much of the plate of for sure, and cost us another one.
Carlos Correa will do that to you from time to time.
When he's out there healthy, he's a dangerous man in any kind of way you want to look at it. Defensively, offensively, there's a reason they were offering him all the money in San Francisco before they found out a bit about his kind of degenerative back, I guess.
Right. And then that, you know, how much of that is really an issue? But when you look at the numbers, like for example, Cubs go 6-for-31 in the first game, 4-for-31 yesterday. I understand that the starting pitcher responsibility here is part of it when it comes to Cade Horton, when it comes to Shota Imanaga, who I'm a little more critical of, you know, at this point, because I expect more, and I'm sorry, that's just how it is. But when it comes to the run support that you're trying to give this team, offense has got to be there.
You're not going to win games when you score one run. You're not going to win games when you score two runs. That's just bottom line. That's why, although I'm worried that Cade Horton's not going to be able to live up to the previous billing of a possible like number one starter. He's not in the class of some of these other young guns that we're seeing around the league,
which is unfortunate.
But if he can eventually fine tune his stuff and be a solid number two, I'm good with that. I mean, obviously you need guys to get outs. That's what Craig Counsell keeps telling me.
Well, also like when you're watching the game, you know, we're talking in the pre-show meeting about for example, what Mizorowski does or something like that, or we're talking about what we saw to Paul Skeens or as you mentioned, the young players. I am thinking to myself, man, life is a lot easier when you've got one of those. When you've got that guy, young starter, who can throw absolute heat on the mound.
I want to know that there's a plan going forward. And that's really what the issue is. And that's whether or not we're talking about Cade Horton and being able to pitch long past the All-Star break as a starter. That's who you're bringing in as far as when trade deadline kicks in, which is we've been told several times now, it's nothing's going to happen likely until after the MLB draft next week. But from an offensive standpoint, I just want to know that this team can find ways to score runs without the long ball. Because last week we saw the long ball on display. This week they have not hit a home run as far as the starters go.
And the other team has.
So it's like, how are you matching this? Because let me tell you, up next after this game, win or lose, sweep or just you lost 2 of 3. There's a team they're about to face that hits bombs.
And also, I think they're going to be paying a lot of attention to how your right fielder performs at their ballpark.
I think Kyle Tucker will be okay over there because...
That's the point. They want to see how he fits at that place.
It's an audition.
Exactly.
You see it as a walking audition?
Also, in the game yesterday, what was right fielder doing when it came to some of the routes on the balls and that were hitting his area? Did you guys notice that too? Like, there were times where I was asking myself, like, why are you so far away from this ball or X or Y?
That's about positioning before the pitch, though.
Mm-hmm. It is. But it also just makes me wonder sometimes about the full sprint and things like that.
I know we're up against it, but I just want to point out we got a lot of people on the text line just seemingly concerned. 708, should we also be concerned the Cubs have lost 6 of their last 9 road games going into today and, of course, Yankee Stadium next? Yeah, that's cool, but like I'm not going to get overblown about what's happening going up against the All-Star break. I just refuse to do it. That's just me.
This series after what happened in June, you take notice. It's just a matter of how much you're taking. That's my issue with it. We're all building data here. You're building up a resume. Coming up next here on Rahimi and Harris on the Score. We did a lot when it came to the Bears survey that they sent a lot of ticket buyers, season ticket holders, etc., about the new stadium. You heard it mentioned in the open. Well, we got some more details about ticket prices at least thrown out to one of the receivers of said survey. So we'll get some numbers. We'll talk about it next right here on Rahimi and Harris on the Score.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
So we have a couple decisions we need to make. And this is something we just had good conversations with Lil Durk on.
Yes,
and
this is perfect timing.
Was that when they were going over stadium on Hard Knocks?
They had to clear it with Lil Durk.
I don't think
they want to clear it with him anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point,
that's
Robbie.
That's a great point.
This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. We get you ready for Cubs baseball that is coming up at 11:30, by the way. Cubs concluding their series this afternoon against the Twins. Pregame coverage begins at 11:35. First pitch at 12:10 on The Score in the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Yesterday, we found out from multiple people around Chicagoland, as the Bears put it, that they had received a survey regarding what you might want as the Bears paying ticket buying person in their new stadium. And I thought that it was a really good idea. I think it's great to survey fans, survey the people who are actually going and buying tickets as to what they want. Well, today I got some proposed prices. This is to one ticket holder. This is a season ticket holder. Would you like to hear what the options are?
Yes, please.
So, number one, they proposed the concept of a membership. A lot of people call it personal seat licenses. It depends on what you want to call it. It's the idea of buying season tickets over a certain amount of time, perhaps a year. And in this case, one of the options for the membership was buying tickets for as long as that stadium exists. I don't know if that changes, if they change the ownership. I don't know what the rules are. I'm sure when it's a big purchase price, the legalities get worked out. But that was one of the things that was discussed according to what I was told and what I have in front of me in this survey. So they discussed method of paying a membership fee. One full payment up front prior to stadium opening. 3 annual installments for 36 months prior to the stadium open. 5 annual financed payments with interest after the stadium opens with 20% down up front. I would imagine, and this is just my conjecture, that this money would be helped to finance the stadium.
So this is mortgage-like. 20% down payment, then financing for the next 3 years.
When you hear the prices, you might see why.
Oh, okay.
10 annual financed payments with interest after stadium opening with 20% down up front. But to have options is also a good thing, I think. Again, like, I don't bristle at any of these things with how the Bears are trying to ask people what they might want. And they have this map of a proposed stadium that people have released online. You can see it on Twitter. One of our listeners, Carrie, was kind enough to repost it. And that's the same one that I've seen. So for one of them, example, this is a proposal. A reserved seat located in the corner of both the mezzanine level on both sidelines. Food and beverage a la carte. Annual price per seat, $2,375. One-time membership fee per seat, $4,400. Premium reserve seat located in the end zone of the second suite level with access to a private concourse. Food and beverage a la carte, annual price per seat, $3,050. One-time membership fee per seat, $19,950.
Woo!
But it is my understanding that that would be for the perpetuity of the stadium.
But you still got to pay for those tickets every year.
No, that would be like the one-time fee.
No, I'm saying the $19,000, but the $3,000, what was it?
Yeah, the other one annualized, yeah. That's like $3,000.
And that price can go up also.
Correct, yeah. Business, you'd think, would pick up.
Price of the brick.
Food and beverage a la carte for another option. This time a reserved seat in the end zone of the lower bowl. Annual price per seat, $2,375. One-time membership fee per seat, $17,575. Again, this is just a survey. This is not what they're actually proposing. This is what was sent to one season ticket holder.
They're gauging the interest at those price points then?
Yeah, because the last thing I want people to think is when we're reading all these numbers, and it's a lot to hear on a radio station, that's what the Bears are charging. That is not the case. These are options, and this is, would you be interested in this? A reserve seat located at the sideline of the upper deck on both sidelines, including food and beverage, annual price per seat, $1,625. And in this case, the annualized number for the membership was not included. So that's another option. So those are four price points that were floated out to a source of mine who was a season ticket holder who got the survey that a lot of other Bears ticket buyers also got. I don't know. A lot of times, like, we've had people check in and tell us even yesterday what the price point that they would be interested at was selected. And they had a survey option where they could say, this is the price that I'm interested in.
Well, 815 right now says, I am not a season ticket holder. However, I was sent the survey. I've only been to two games in the last 2 years, and that it was sent to them on July 8th.
Yeah, and that's what usually happens. Once you get this information, we sourced it. There's a couple different places where it came from. So then we kind of understand that this is out there. And then when it is, that's when you start to get more information. That's usually how this works. So a couple of more options here. A reserved seat located at the sideline of the upper deck on both sidelines, inclusive food and beverages. Annual price per seat, $1,625. One-time membership fee per seat, $5,000.
Wait.
Here's where the baller status comes in. Well, that was upper deck.
It was upper deck, but did you say that food and it's not a la carte there?
No, that was inclusive.
That's inclusive. I like that.
Yeah. Again, they're giving you options, which okay. I think is a really good idea. 1920 lounge seat. Now we're talking. Now, where are you at, Ishbias?
This is where you're taking me, right?
This is me and Marshall money right here. Between the 40-yard lines at the back of the lower bowl on both sidelines with access to the sideline club within a club? We got clubs on clubs at the New Bears Stadium. Make some noise. Inclusive food and beverage, because obviously. The annual price per seat.
Per seat.
Not per table. Per seat.
No one's getting a table at the club.
There's a club at a club. We don't know what happens.
I'm not getting a table. Tell me how much a seat is.
$10,825.
So that's more than $1,000. Well, just under $1,000 a game if we're including preseason, right?
Right. If you get like, and especially if it's like the 9 guaranteed home games versus the 8.
Right.
One-time membership fee per seat, $116,400.
I'm out.
Okay. What about this option?
Okay.
A reserve seat located at the center of the upper deck on both sidelines. So like 50-yard line, but you're up high.
It's nosebleed. Bring your binoculars.
Food and beverage. But is it nosebleed when you're in a dome? Like, that's the other thing. Having watched many games in domes,
it's nosebleed when you're in the United Center.
But it's a lot easier to deal with when you're in a dome than when you're outside, when you're in upper decks.
Well, the birds are probably not doing the bird thing on you.
Well, that's good luck, right? 219 asks, does beverages mean alcohol? I would assume, but I'm not sure. 708 says, can Layla share if different people are getting different surveys? The numbers I have, we mentioned one of them yesterday, was a single ticket buyer, and that they said that they were asked, like, what option would you pay? And it just was like a bidding system where you kept going down, like, 500? No. 400? No. And then they said they answered at 275. So that was told to us on the text line, because I want to reveal sources here and make sure you guys know what we are discussing. So the next one says, a reserve seat located at the center of the upper deck, inclusive food and beverages, annual price per seat, $3,050. One-time membership fee per seat, $6,425. So it seems like they're offering some discounts here for the membership, but then also they are respective of the price you're paying for that seat.
I like the balance.
Like, you're getting
there.
A bigger discount for the membership at that seat level.
Yeah, the $100,000 for the membership is...
Well, that's for the suite.
Like, I know.
Within a club at the Bears game.
But that's where we're going. You told me that's where you're taking me. So I want to...
That'll be the stadium for Bears, too. The club within a club within a club.
Can we split a seat?
You know, first it was a club. Then it was like, oh, we're getting tables. Then it's like, no, now it's table location. And then it was like, no, now you're table located next to the DJ. This is Raheem and Harris on the Score as we talk about the Bears survey that they sent season ticket holders, ticket buyers, about what they want in a new stadium. And again, these are just proposals. These are not charged. These are just things that they proposed according to this particular season ticket holder. When I got the information.
We're just whiteboarding.
We are, but I just want people to know that, the Bears are not charging this. This is another one. A club seat located at the 30 to 40 yard line of the lower bowl on both sidelines with access to the sideline club. This sounds a lot like what they do at Cowboys Stadium.
You have your actual seat.
The lower level club, and it's like field level, and you can see like some of the tunnels that the players go through and things like that. Food and beverages a la carte, annual price per seat, $5,050, one-time membership fee per seat, $70,325. So they think those are going to sell in the future.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's like the price is so much lower for the ticket, even though you get all this access, but that one-time fee is where they get you.
But like this year it's a discount. But then it's like, if you want this sideline access to a good Bears team in 2 years...
Does anybody want to go in with me? We just need like 15 people.
And to buy one seat.
Just to buy one seat.
Do we share it at the same time?
Yeah.
Studs is on Twitch and thinks that this is disorganized. Oh, he's asking the question. I guess somebody on Twitch said it was disorganized. And Studs says, what about a survey to their fans tells you this is disorganized? I agree with Studs. I actually think the opposite. I think this is very organized because you get all these options.
I want to point out, 630, I've been a season ticket holder for for 40 years and did not receive the survey. Again, it's,
did you
we know
check your
sample.
Spam folder?
Ooh,
I'm not
good,
kidding.
That's a
check
good question.
Your spam folder. 414, I'll only pay if they reopen Club Dub. Ask for Club Dub. If you're a season ticket holder and you want Club Dub, your time is now. And again, they show you where the seats would be located on the map. They're proposing all these things. I think it's a really good idea. So this one's a reserve seat located at the center of the mezzanine level on both sidelines. Food and beverage a la carte. Annual price per seat, $3,925. The one-time membership fee per seat is $22,625. 847 on the text line. I can confirm a friend who is a current season ticket holder seemed to have some slightly different questions than I, a single game ticket buyer.
That makes sense as well.
Good to know. So that concludes all the prices I got. So you can tell that they have an idea of if you want in at like an elite level seat this year or for the first year of the stadium, rather, it wouldn't be this year. But for that first year, then, okay, we'll give you a discount for that first year. But then if you want it into perpetuity of the stadium, then it might cost you more because they're expecting their product to get better.
We're all expecting their product to get better.
Yes, we are.
I don't know where it will be in 4 years or however long it's going to take to build the stadium, though. So, but it's interesting they got the 3-year kind of lead up to the stadium in terms of the financing and or payment plan.
And then Brandon from 574 says, I got the survey and I am not a season ticket holder. I didn't get the answer to the membership and the stadium questions because I clicked not interested in that feature. I did get questions concerning all-inclusive tailgating experience.
It is a choose your own adventure book in survey form.
I have to tell you, though, I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah, this is how you find out.
Before we build this, tell us what you want. What you really, really want.
What you really, really want?
So tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
I wanna.
Always a good one. But I don't think that this is a, I think this is a forward-thinking move, and I feel like there's a lot of options that they're considering that we haven't gotten to experience in a game experience. Like, I've gotten to go to the Midway, and I thought it was great, and I actually like how I can navigate Soldier Field from a fan experience because it is easier to get to things. Like, once you build a bigger stadium, everything takes longer. You know, the experience at Soldier Field for me to get from point A to B regarding a bathroom, especially as a woman, where I might have the advantage at a football game.
Funny you mentioned bathrooms, 414. Does the survey mention if they are building the restrooms Kevin Warren has promised?
I think that would actually make a lot of people happy. If you up the bathroom per fan ratio, that would make a lot of people happy.
We'll build restroom.
I think that's the reason he said that.
Also, 847, club season ticket holder since 1999 when they renovated the stadium. I got the survey, but haven't opened it yet. I will later today. 70,000 for a PSL is hard to swallow when we've taken a bath on tickets for two decades plus.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And from what I understand, from what I read, tell me if you got something different or you interpret it differently, as I have not bought season tickets. But this seems like the survey's asking if you want them for as long as the stadium is there. That was what that price was. So, and it would make sense that they want to use that money to help build it. All of that is pretty linear in thought process.
We know they need help financing the stadium.
Right. And we know that usually when that happens, guess who's paying?
The customer.
There it is. We have more to come here on Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score. We get back to baseball because we needed a stopper and we got one.
Yeah, you know what? The club rules aren't just for the club, because Adrian Hauser, he followed a club rule pretty much to the T, and it benefited him and the Sox very well.
In appreciation of a White Sox unlikely hero. Next.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Raheemy, Marshall Harris, Raheemy and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Top two, no score. Adrian Hauser on the mound for the White Sox today, but we want to show you a little bit of video as he came off the mound after the top of the first. The umpire was going to stop him, check his hand, check his glove, as they always do, but you can see him gesturing, and we will save you some of the gorier video, but Adrian Hauser went into the dugout and immediately was ill in the dugout. He is back on the mound, but as you can see there, he needed to get into the dugout and find a bucket or whatever he was looking for.
Dan Shulman on the Blue Jays broadcast. Love to hear that Adrian Hauser, the White Sox starter, in their win over the Blue Jays yesterday, who had won 10 games in a row. Didn't we say that the Sox were due? Didn't we say that, Marshall? I feel like we did.
Well, Adrian Hauser's due because whenever he's due up, he gets it done.
Let's go. So, yes, the White Sox stopped the absolutely scorching red-hot Blue Jays yesterday, beating them 2-1, thanks in large part to the performance, dare I say gutty, of Adrian Hauser. Nicely done yet again, Adrian Hauser. What can you say about what he's done? This is not just an impressive body of work, but he's making his case A, to be traded if that's something he's into or not. You don't really get a choice. But also, he's showing you his value day in and day out. Like, how do you not like what you've seen out of that guy?
Oh, no, I love what I've seen out of him as a guy who didn't know what to expect. They get all these guys, they scoop them up, hope that they do well, and then they can flip them. This is going down the road of the Eric Fetty acquisition coming from Korea, right?
Get more if you trade him, please.
And so I think there's a possibility here that Hauser, with the way the seller's market is looking right now, as in there's not that many sellers, if as many teams are within four games, let's say, of the American League wild card, or four games of the National League wild card, as there are right now, in 2 weeks, Adrian Hauser is going to get you something back, because there's going to be a mini bidding war for these pitchers who are available.
White Sox used only three pitchers yesterday in the final game of that series, which I always think is so important. Seven innings he goes. Seven hits, only a single earned run. two walks, two strikeouts. He is working with a 1.56 ERA. They went Hauser, Grant Taylor, and Jordan Leisure, nine innings, and they won a 2-1 ball game. As somebody who loves pitching, you have to appreciate that type of performance.
I think seeing him go seven innings is probably the best part of that, because you kind of expected what you've seen from him so far. Okay, this guy can keep you in a game, not give up a whole lot. But when you go seven innings against a team that's that hot, that's won 10 in a row, that's saying, hey, third time through the order, what's good?
Right.
And that is like the biggest marker of a pitcher's success, because a lot of people can go through the inning a couple of times, or through the lineup, excuse me, a couple of times. Mm-hmm. But that third time through the lineup, that means your stuff isn't just smoke and mirrors. It means you have established stuff. And the fact that he got sick and then went out and did this, Layla, I'm amazed by his performance and understanding now that he has a track record of doing this thing. You know, I covered Donovan McNabb for years. And he was famous for throwing up before a game.
Let's listen, because apparently not only was it a gutty performance metaphorically from Adrian Hauser, it was a gutty performance because he threw seven innings. He made it look easy against one of the best teams in baseball right now, and also had some issues in the dugout.
The broadcast caught you sick a little bit after.
Oh, yeah. That's probably about the fifth time. So that's nothing new. The trainers knew. I've told them when I came in. I was like, hey, this is a possibility. And so once I get it out, it's all good, ready to rock and roll. Feel a lot better after. So I was able to settle in after that and just, you know, puke and rally. After the first inning, felt a lot better. You know, that humidity out there was pretty thick to start off the game. And then we were able to get some wind blowing in there and kind of cooled it off just a little bit and was able to get my legs under me and felt a lot better.
Okay, so he literally uses the term puke and rally.
But puke and rally.
But also hurls in the dugout and then is like, yeah, I'm good now. I admire the people who can casually vomit and just move on with their day.
So,
because I cannot do that. I am talking about sports in this scenario.
The way the club rules are set up, there's 10 of them. This hits specifically on club rule number 9. Club rule number 9 is never let them see you vomit. Because we've all been in a situation where we've had someone in our party on an evening out that maybe overdid it and they needed to like figure it out. I've seen people.
You have to hit the eject button sometimes.
Listen, I've seen people in a bar, in a club, a lounge, on the street, throw up. When you know that you're not feeling well, just go to the bathroom.
Right.
Because guess what? If you go to the bathroom and you unload, you can come back out like nothing happened. Like you just went to the bathroom like it was a normal like break.
You're going
to
need a mint though afterwards. Yeah. Like from the bathroom like attendant, you're going to need, here's a dollar.
He said he rinsed his mouth out with water and just kept it moving.
I don't know the water's enough.
He's the starting pitcher. Like that's what makes this so amazing.
Makes me want to puke.
Also that he knew that it was a possible vom day.
I think he knows based on what's in his stomach and also what the weather is like. I think those are the two biggest factors, whether or not something's going to come up.
Yeah, 219, you're right. Not the first time Hauser thrown up in the first inning. Yes, he said it's happened multiple times. He did it for the Brewers a little while ago. Ozzy was making some jokes on the postgame show. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. Ozzy Guillen was laughing, and he's like, you can't be eating chimichangas before you go out and pitch.
Not the chimichanga. Chimichanga is wild before an athletic event. Yes.
Ozzy named the heaviest thing you could possibly eat. Who was it? Was it Aroldis Chapman who would eat the Cuban pastries before he had a game and then realized that wasn't a good idea?
I don't know. But I think it's different
Aroldis, when Aroldis who could still be traded for and is a freak of nature and is still playing at a high level.
Look, Aroldis has a chance getting on the right team. He could make another World Series run. He could be somebody's closer in the World Series if he gets with the right team.
And I was curious what the Cuban pastries were. They sounded pretty good. It was like some guava-based pastry.
The one thing I'll say is this. This man has had one outing out of his 9 outings where he didn't go at least 6 innings. And in that one outing, he only went 5. But Layla, over his last 3 starts, and this is why this one means so much, he threw 7 scoreless against the Giants, came back, through 8 innings of 2-run ball, but both of those runs were unearned. But it was against the Rockies. So I was like, it's the Rockies.
Yeah.
But to do it against the Blue Jays in that spot, a first-place team, how can you not believe in what he's selling right now?
So there's some stats I found on Adrian Hauser and what he does after he pukes.
Oh, no.
I love that this is actually kept.
Yeah. So in 2019, a year after he vomited. So in 2018, he vomited twice on the mound, and then he finished the game. He only gave up a run. The next year, Hauser threw up in the first inning, just four batters into the contest. He remained in the game and then struck out 10. I mean, like, Cubs, come on. You got to get this guy and make him sick.
I admire, take what happened, take the vomit out of it, right? Which is not a phrase I thought I would say today. How he can have that performance, and when you need the stopper, he gives you that against that team who was hitting like that. Vlad Guerrero Jr. was 0-for-4 yesterday. Even the way he responded in the clutch, like how he got to the team, got a call and drove down. The guy knows how to perform in some stressful situations.
I'm just imagining, like, World Series game. You're in the dugout. You're nervous. And then you see Adrian Hauser feel sick. You're like, we got it today, guys. this guy's on the mound. Dude, we got this.
I'll say this, too. Adrian Hauser's made 9 starts. He's got a 2.9 war. That's crazy.
That is incredible. Somebody buy Adrian Hauser some flowers or something. I would say food, but I don't think that's a good idea.
An ERA plus of 268.
Man, we appreciate you, Adrian Hauser. An incredible performance all around. We have more to come here on Rahimi and Harris on the Score. I want to also tell you about this. Getting people stuff, we've got something for you. Keep listening to our show all this week for your chance to win a pair of tickets to Baseball After Dark at Wildfire in Glenview on Wednesday, July 23rd, featuring special guest Michael Busch. It's hosted by Matt Spiegel. I will love the baseball conversation. Baseball After Dark is presented by Huntington Bank. Life is a masterpiece. Make your money story a bestseller. And by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating wonderful memories. We're getting you ready for Cubs baseball here on the Score, so we moved up 5 on it. It's a special extended edition, 6 on it. Pressing sports questions that we have both locally and nationally coming up next.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got 5 on.
Well, guess what, friends? We get you ready for Cub baseball next on the Score, so it's not 5 on it. You get 6 on it today.
Just a little something extra for the people.
That's right. And some of the questions are indeed Cubs related. Some of them are Sox related, and some of them are maybe just me being paranoid about the trade deadline, wondering what the Brewers are doing. Hi, Brewers. Why are you doing these things?
They have something brewing, is
Layla's
what you're saying?
Layla's dance with anxiety about sports.
Nah.
That was a good one, Marshall. I like that.
Number one.
All right, this one hurts because it's our guy. Is it time to start worrying about Ian Happ's extended slump at the plate?
I think so, in a way. I know we talked to him about it on Tuesday. Marshall, you asked him about the last month he had had. And then we look at the numbers. The last 28 days, the batting average, 163. The on-base percentage, 291. Slug is 348. Not what you want to see out of your leadoff hitter, unfortunately. And I know Ian likes to have a regular place in the lineup. He acknowledged it. It's not like he was in denial of what was going on at the plate. Still, there is value in working a pitch count as a leadoff hitter. There's no question. There's value in being able to see what the pitcher is giving you. But when you look to veterans on a team, not just for their leadership, but also what they're doing in a lineup, especially when the leadoff position becomes so crucial in baseball, it is something that I'm watching. Again, we're watching these patterns form. And just like we've talked about Dansby Swanson's numbers with runners in scoring position, we have to do the same when it comes to Ian Happ batting leadoff and what's happened.
I'm looking at his stats right now, and it's been woeful. 156 over the last 30 days, 281 on base percentage. Over the last 7 days, though, that on base percentage is above 300 at 318. It's really when you focus in like the last 2 weeks. Ian Happ's numbers, not great. 4-for-46, an .087 average, a .236 on base, because he's going to walk. No matter what happens, he's going to walk. But when you're not hitting the ball, one thing you're definitely not doing is slugging. So that OPS, on base plus slugging, is at .345. I think, and going back to the answer that he gave us when he was on Tuesday, he feels like he's hitting the ball hard. He's obviously trying to make stuff happen. That's why he got called out of the baseline when he tries to get the infield hit. I think he's just going through a rough patch. I'm not as concerned as a lot of other people are. I want to end one thing, though. This talk about moving PCA up to the leadoff spot is ridiculous.
Somewhat for the same reason.
Pete Crowarmstrong doesn't walk. In that same time span, Ian Happ, a .236 on base percentage over the last 15 days. Pete Crowarmstrong, .269. He also doesn't take a lot of pitches. Have you seen some of his recent at-bats?
Yeah, 3-pitch at-bats. Also, just throw him a slider after you throw him 2 fastballs. Not to be a jerk about it, but if I'm the opposing pitcher, that's probably what I'm going to do.
I would say the one guy that you could, if you want to change things around, the one guy I'd be willing to give a shot up top, maybe Nico Hoerner. But I don't think moving Ian Happ right now is the right move, and I think Craig Counsell has a pretty good beat on it. And I'll also be interested to see what happens when Matt Shaw is back in the lineup today, batting ninth, because he's hitless in his last 7 days.
Number two.
Former White Sox first baseman Andrew Vaughn, I can't believe it, is having a big first week with the Brewers. Vaughn hit a 3-run home run against All-Star Yoshinobu Yamamoto in his debut plate appearance on Monday. Then on Wednesday, yesterday, he provided a pinch hit game-tying single to help Milwaukee sweep the Dodgers. What magic spell did the Brewers use to fix the Sox number 3 overall pick from the 2019 draft?
I don't know. Like, this is concerning. Like, when I saw a post from Jen Latta, who used to be an anchor at the Comcast Sportsnet Chicago, she's now in Milwaukee, and she says, Andrew Vaughn making the Brewers look smart. I'm like, what? What bizarro universe have I been in? Where am I right now? What year is this? But that's what's happening. We talk about change of scenery for athletes benefiting them so much. I especially think that's true on the White Sox, given how that core of players ended things. That's why I think Luis Robert does have more trade value than possibly we think. It's just a matter of what a buyer is willing to pay that will determine it. But again, it just might be as simple as change of scenery. Is it sustainable? Like, we saw Jake Berger go to the Marlins. He was able to hit a lot of home runs at the time. Like, he was able to rake that. That lasted only a certain amount of time. Now he's with Texas and he's up and down. So I kind of consider that in this. But either way, the thing that you can do as a player is go out there and show what you can do offensively with your bat when you're asked. He was not doing that here. And I don't know anybody who would disagree with it.
You know what Andrew Vaughn is batting on this season? He has raised his average to .199.
Woo!
I think he's going to go above the Mendoza line and never come back down underneath it again, which isn't hard to do. If you go 1-for-5, you're going to stay above the Mendoza line. Here's my thing. The man has made 3 appearances in 3 games. We know what happened in his first ever plate appearance for the Brewers. He hits the big 3-run homer that leads off a 9-1 win over the Dodgers. Then, after getting the start in the second game of the series and going 1-for-3 with an RBI, also a walk, his last plate appearance ends the series with the Dodgers because he gets the walk-off hit. In his limited time there, 3-for-6, couple of walks, couple of strikeouts, he looks like a guy who's been given new life, and that whole chain of scenery trope is actually paying off for the Brewers. And unfortunately, the Cubs are going to have to deal with this guy later this season. You wonder if he's going to still be at this level.
Who has the change of scenery trope not worked for? Because that's like a Theo Epstein base.
I think Tim Anderson, the change of scenery did not work out for him.
He was already in decline, I feel
Eloy.
Like.
Well, that's the point, though. Like, if you're in decline, or Eloy, that's another good one. If you're in decline, it's like, does the change of scenery work or does it not? If you continue to decline, it did not work.
Yeah, Gavin Sheets, good point, 847. Yep. I think there are some guys who the Sox knew had a lot of potential who probably may be a little more motivated not playing for the White Sox.
It's a bad situation. At least it was in recent years.
Number 3.
The MLB will be using the ABS, also known as the Automated Ball Strike System, in the All-Star Game next week. Is this a sign that we should expect it to be implemented next season?
I don't know that it's next season, but you should expect it to be implemented, especially when there's a new CBA along the way. I feel like that makes it make a lot of sense. Umpires need help. sadly, perhaps more than ever. And when they're letting their egos get in the way, when the tape doesn't lie, when ball don't lie, that's when it's a real concern. I rarely say this phrase. Some of these guys need to be humbled because your effect on the game is too much because you are upset. I don't need to be talking about an umpire's mood affecting my baseball game that I'm watching with players who are actually paid to be there. I know the umps get salaries. I know they've got a job to do. But when the umpire's decision becomes more the story of the game than the actual individual, and a lot of times it's ego-based, that's when I have a real issue. There's got to be some accountability here that doesn't offend them.
Here's what I'll say. I watch tennis. And watching how instant replay was implemented in tennis and how quick it is, and understanding in the minor leagues how quick it's been to just show up on the... You find out immediately. I would say this. Each team, as of now, gets two challenges and the ability to retain said challenges if you are correct. I would expand that number to three, if not four. Because it's so quick. It'd be different if it was time-consuming. But because it's so quick, I like the idea. Because... especially in an all-star game, it's going to be kind of weird because these guys don't play on the same team. It's different when it's instituted like it was in spring training where everybody is on the same page. Like, I can't afford to use this right now. In an all-star game, you may only play like three innings.
At least it doesn't count anymore.
Yeah.
At least it doesn't give home field advantage to a particular league.
That's fair. But I think, yes, this is going to be instituted next season. It should be instituted next season. They've slow rolled it. They've done a great job with it. Everybody who's dealing with this has now seen it because they had it in spring training.
I just think the umpires might push back on it, on the timing of it.
Let them push. Let them push. Like, it's not about you.
Yeah, like, think about the MLB strategy to do it on the All-Star game, one of the biggest stages they have outside of the playoffs. Like, the MLB is definitely trying to push this heavily on us, because then we're all talking about it in the All-Star game. Like, oh, I loved what they did there. I think it is 100% coming next
year. I don't think they're pushing it heavily on us. I think we're already. 72% of fans who were polled during spring training said the impact of ABS on their experience at the game was a positive one. And I'm betting the other 28% didn't even notice. That's why it didn't matter to them.
The fact that it's that overwhelming in favor. It shouldn't be all about somebody's judgment and the mood affects the decision that much. I understand that there's an art to framing. I understand that certain players get more consideration because they do make nice with umpires and diplomacy helps. But at the end of the day, facts should matter to your actual performance. This is going to make people better whether or not they like it. And their ego and their attitude shouldn't factor into these types of things.
Can we bring Angel Hernandez back? Just so we can be humble.
No.
You know what's funny?
No.
Speaking of Angel, I heard the reason that he stayed so long in baseball was because he actually would say, oh yeah, I got that call wrong. Like he would actually be diplomatic. His ego wouldn't be as driven in these moments afterward. Like you could actually have a conversation. That's what I was told by somebody who's a former manager.
By that decree, I would imagine that he'd be very good with this because it gives him kind of a safety net of sorts.
I mean, that's it. It's going to come down to how these men adopt technology. Can we save that and use it for many things? Just save that sentence and we'll see how many times we can apply it on a daily basis.
You know how people are telling you need to use more AI and learn how to use it so it can help you with your job? This is the umpire's version of that. Embrace it and it makes your job easier.
Number four.
It's Raheem and Harris. Even though it's five on it, it is 11 o'clock right here. Marshall Harris, Layla Raheemi. Question number four. On Wednesday, the NBA announced the Emirates Cup will return for a third consecutive season. The tournament will kick off on October 31st, spooky Halloween. All 30 NBA teams will be divided into six groups of five teams. The groups will be determined by draw based on last season's record. The Bulls landed in East Group C, along with the Knicks, Heat, Bucks, and Hornets. Can you come up with any alternative combination of six teams that would give the Bulls a shot at advancing to the quarterfinals?
It would be five teams, right? Because they're five-team groups? Yeah, I'm just making
five,
sure,
five,
I'm making
five.
Sure I'm not saying anything incorrect.
What if there's a sneaky bonus team you don't know about, like
bonus
G League
team.
Ignite or something?
Okay, let's
They just
do
enter the
Bulls
chat.
Bulls 2.
I can definitely come up with the teams that would allow the Bulls to advance, because the top two teams in each pool advance, correct? I do have that part right, I believe. So, or not, no, it's not the top two. It's one from each group, and then there's overall, they fill in the blanks with the next best teams from each conference.
Yes.
A fourth team gets in. Okay. It's got to be the East. That's the problem. So the answer is no. Because it's got to, listen, the teams that you would say would be the Raptors, the Hornets, the Wizards, and then you struggle because there's no fifth team that you can say the Bulls can decisively beat. It's not the Hawks with all the moves they've made. It's not the Heat because, well, the Heat. It's not the Sixers because they're going to have so much more talent that's healthy and ready to go next season. So the answer is no.
Yeah, unfortunately, I somewhat feel the same way, especially when your head-to-head matters in the Emirates Cup.
Yep.
So then if you're facing the Knicks, the Heat, the Bucks, and the Hornets, your head-to-head against the Hornets is favorable. Everyone else?
Less favorable?
Less favorable. Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. When I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, the Knicks just got Mike Brown. Like, the Heat clearly know what to do when money's on the line against the Bulls. The Bucks just got Miles Turner. I have no idea. Like, you can go down the line and you can name the reasons why they might not advance. I think it's the concept. I like that the NBA is continuing to embrace it because I do think it mixes up the regular season, which is what the goal was to begin with. Also, this segment is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. But I think when it comes to trying to gauge the Bulls' talent, especially when I saw that draw in particular, Knicks, Heat, Bucks, and Hornets, I was like, ah.
But my point is, that's how it would have been with anybody in the East.
Maybe the three wouldn't have been so statement-making.
Right. Okay, that's fair. But it's like it could have been like the Cavs, the Celtics, the Pacers.
Cavs, Celtics, Pacers.
Or a Detroit Pistons team or Orlando Magic team. More young teams than anything else. Reminder, also, we're broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Six on it, right? That's what we're doing.
Yeah, we get you ready for the Cubs game. It's coming up after us. So that's why we're letting you know about all these things.
Number five.
All right, last question. Not last question because we're doing six on. Our fifth question is always a life question. I was in Trader Joe's yesterday. They were giving out samples. I wanted one. I ate it. But then I wanted another one. The question is it morally right to take more than one sample at Trader Joe's or Costco?
No. No, because you know what happens when you want another? The idea is they give you the samples so you'll buy the box or whatever. What was it in this case?
It was Trader Joe's or Costco.
Right.
Like, oh, what I got?
Yes.
It was like a cracker with cheese.
Yeah, they want you to either buy the cheese or the box of crackers or both.
Were there different flavors of crackers and were there different types of cheese?
No, it's all the same.
No, they promote an item.
Okay. Well, sometimes a variety, though, like a spicy version, a regular version.
Yeah, fair enough. But no, if you want to, that means you got to buy the actual box of crackers and or the cheese. Did you do that?
No, I didn't. But here's the thing. If you look at the rules on Costco and Trader Joe's, they said take as many samples as you want. It says that. But the thing is, morally, as a society, we are told to only take one and then move on with your day. But I'm hungry, and I want samples.
Okay, let's look at it like this. First of all, they've given you the green light. By their own admission, they have given you the green light. My answer to this question, are you guys calculus fans?
No, I like hate math? Calculus. Yeah.
No.
I took stat instead.
Have you seen Mean Girls?
I love Mean Girls.
Oh.
The limit does not exist. Works in both cases.
Oh, so calculus. You're housing samples.
What you, like, I'm eating until I feel like I don't want to eat anymore. You've put it out there. You said I could take as much as I want. I'm not saying I am taking a lot. I'm just saying I'm not going to feel bad if I get a second sample. What?
But, you know, there's some Karen, like, giving you the stink eye. Like, oh, you're taking more than one.
I don't give the stink eye. It's just...
No, I'm not calling
are
you
calling yourself
Karen.
A Karen?
Yeah.
No, because I'm... But I am the one who said no. So I feel like I have to respond on behalf of the no's. I don't judge others for eating more food. I just think, out of principle, if I want more, that means I might want more later. And the goal of the sample is to get you to buy the item. And I'm like, well, I'm a sucker for marketing here. I will buy the item.
Would you say it's okay to get multiples if you're also buying the item?
I don't know.
Because here's the thing. You know, they tell you don't go to the grocery store
hungry,
on an empty stomach.
Which Robbie did yesterday, party foul.
So that's bad. So like if you're hungry, you may eat that sample and be like, I was so hungry, I don't really care what it was. I like it, and I'm going to buy the sample. You might need a few more bites to make sure that's something you really want to invest in.
Also, does anyone actually buy the thing they sampled? I have never.
I just said I did.
I would never do that.
This is why Robbie feels bad, because he's the guy who never buys the product.
Like, if there's a little Swedish meatball, I'm never going to go buy some Swedish meatballs, but this is a rare opportunity to get a nice little treat that I may never have.
So 815 brings up a good point about the Costco experience. Bro said, but I'm hungry. They've got a cafe 50 feet away. Yes, at Costco they do, but sometimes they're sampling things that are not cafe available.
Man, get that hot dog and that drink and keep it moving.
Do you think they're judging you, like the person who's like giving out the samples?
I don't care, Robbie.
Trader Joe's, no.
But like, do you think they take inventory? Like, all right, that person, that one. Oh, this person's taking another. Oh, okay, give them a stink eye again.
I don't think so. Not at Trader Joe's, at least. And at Costco, I feel like those are hired guns. Like, they come in and they're like, "We're here to give you the sample," and they got a whole setup. And sometimes there's like a grill involved of some sort, or a toaster oven. Yes. So I think in those cases, their job is to move product. Like, they're moving the samples. They're telling you exactly what they're out there for.
What if the sample givers are commission-based? That'd be awesome. That'd be a job. So now it's a sell, too.
Commission on a free sample, though?
No.
Commission on a free sample,
margins
zero.
Margins have to be terrible.
Commission on your sampling, but you're also getting paid for every unit that you actually sell.
So this is a little before everybody's time, but I remember as a child, like,
being not before
with,
my time, then.
Being
Go
with
ahead.
My grandmother and watching a salesman of some sort of jewelry item, and he was like doing the whole presentation, and all these people were gathered around, kind of like the revival you had at the Cubs game the other day.
Okay.
There is still a group of people who love to gather around somebody who can sell. Like, that still exists.
A good salesman is never going to...
And they were like, here's all these things you can do with this jewelry item. Like, you can wear it like this. You can wear it like this. A QVC type of deal, but in front of people. And I think he was probably based on commission, and he made a lot of sales that day because everybody loved the jewelry item.
Listen, if you can sell, you can find a job in this world. I promise you that. This is the time where we're going to go ahead and give some stuff away, because we're running out of time, to be honest. Caller 6 to the Score contest line, 312-540-0670. You will win a pair of tickets to Baseball After Dark at Wildfire in Glenview on Wednesday, July 23rd, featuring special guest Michael Bush. Baseball After Dark, presented by Huntington Bank. Life is a masterpiece. Make your money story a bestseller. And by Wildfire, join Wildfire restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating wonderful memories.
I did have a good time the last time I was at Wildfire. I remember it well. I like the discourse that we've gotten, especially on our text line and, of course, our Twitch chat. The discussions are pretty funny. 217 says, they say take as many samples as you want. It's like tips aren't necessary, but they're appreciated. You know you better take one sample, and you know you better tip.
Wait, tip the sampler?
No.
Oh, the like, two different situations. Got you.
But even then, I'm sometimes like,
tip
no,
culture's gotten too far.
But yes, no, Starbucks. It's not my job to subsidize why you're not paying people.
That's facts.
I'm taking two samples now. I'm going to do it.
You already did.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to take four. Good point.
What's our sixth question, Robbie?
Six. Bonus question. What is your level of confidence that Cubs right-hander Colin Ray can be the stopper the Northsiders need against a hot Twins offense?
Is it hot?
You want is that like hot? On a scale of 1 to 10? What are you like? What's the confidence level?
Yeah, let's do a scale of 1 to 10. 1 to 10.
Or 0 to 10.
1 to 10 samples.
That sigh you just gave.
You switched the sample.
I don't know, 5? Like, I don't think Colin Ray deserves a lot of pressure. Like, let's keep it... Okay, Porter Hodge, by the way, sent to the injured list. We should probably mention that. The impingement on the shoulder.
No Byron Buxton today.
And I actually think that because it's shoulder, maybe it's a little more concerning than we might think, even though Craig Counsell was pretty casual about it. But that makes the 8-run outburst by the Twins in Game 1 make a little more sense. Then if you move it to Game 2, they scored 4 runs. And no Byron Buxton today, as you mentioned. Okay, so because of no Byron Buxton, which I think is...
You know,
he does affect a game. So let's put it at 6.
So you went from a 5 to a 6, basically.
I did.
Okay, I was getting excited.
Byron Buxton is worth 1 point on my scale.
1 point on a 10-point scale. So he's worth 10% chance that they do things better. All right.
75% chance, and then you take my... It's a Steiner meth reference.
But then you take my 75% chance of winning.
Oh, no.
If we used to go one-on-one.
I got you. I got you. I'll say this. Chris Paddock on the mound today for the Twins. Not a lot of success. In fact, everybody that I'm looking at, no one has hits against him except for Carson Kelly, who's 4-for-12.
If you take his 75% chance.
Kyle Tucker.
But then you take my 75% chance.
0-for-3. Dansby Swanson, 0-for-5. Nico Horner, 0-for-1. Small sample size, 0-for-2 for Ian Happ. So small sample sizes against Chris Paddock. But I'm going to say it's at a 4.
Whoa. You're lower than me. You think they get swept today?
They haven't gotten swept all year. They're due for a sweep.
Well, we did think that the Sox were due for a win against the... I thought that the Blue Jays were due for a loss.
The last World Series champion to not get swept in a season was a Dodgers team that didn't play but 60 games in the year.
Ah, the bubble. The bubble team. Justin Turner was on that team.
There you go.
Fun facts. We ran out of music and everything. Like, it just stops and then we're at this awkward silence.
I don't think it's awkward. I'm enjoying the absence of noise.
I don't know. It's just the segment usually has music.
You're right about that.
So the matchup today, as we mentioned, Chris Paddock is the home team pitcher, 3-7, 4.64 ERA. He's got 68 strikeouts to his name. Colin Ray is starting for the Cubs, 6-3 with a 4.13 ERA, and he's got 60 strikeouts. We have lineups too. As we understand, Ian Happ is batting leadoff. He is in left field. Kyle Tucker is batting second DH today. Seiya Suzuki is in right. Pecro Armstrong batting cleanup. Michael Bush hitting behind PCA. Dansby Swanson at short batting next. Then it's Carson Kelly, Nico Horner, Matt Shaw back in the lineup after his day off to...
We're going
to
swing.
Think about some things.
Not think about them. That sounds much worse. I was just saying work on a swing.
I think he does need to think about some things like getting that bat speed up. Making the swing a little more tight.
I just want to say, like, the Cubs, this is a game they can win, but I'm much more concerned about the series against the New York Yankees. On to the next one, as they say.
You're on to the next one before this one has even started.
I don't have a lot of faith.
Fair enough. But if the Cubs suffer their first sweep all season, to go this long to July 10th to do so.
Impressive.
We're going to take that for sure.
They are in first place, right?
By 1.5 games because the Brewers decided to sweep the Dodgers. So we keep an eye on it, as of course we will do. We're back with a whole show tomorrow here on Raheemy and Harris on the Score. We are going to get into the list that we mentioned about Caleb Williams being left off. So we want to get into that. We will continue our baseball discussion and the stalking segment comes back, but also a friendly reminder. Let us know about your wild trade acquisition ideas. What are your trade proposals? Go to that meatball machine. Odyssey app, leave a voicemail. Thanks to Marshall Harris, Ray Diaz, Robbie Triano, Twitch Mob, our texters, also Connor O'Donnell and Jacob Stutz. We have Cubs baseball game 3 of the series against the Twins coming up next. We'll be right back.